Big Finish present Doctor Who Short Trips. Collector's Item by Paul J. Salamov. Read by Stephen Critchley. The Doctor's right fist hammered down on the console's surface. There was no malice in the gesture. The old girl just needed a little convincing now and again. The now was the temperature control in the time machine's interior. The again was that this was the third time this had happened since leaving Zeta Minor. "It's like an icebox in here," complained Sarah upon entering the control room of the TARDIS. Her breath hung in the chilled air. As she approached the Doctor, she hugged herself and rubbed warmth into her upper arms. The Doctor mumbled something, but it was muffled under layers of impossibly long scarf wrapped around his face and upper torso to stay warm. "I didn't quite catch that," she replied. The Doctor tore the scarf from his face. "Temporal dysphagia." Sarah looked at him. "Is that bad?" "It's not good," replied the Time Lord. "Something is causing the TARDIS to act irrationally."
"Something like what?" inquired Sarah.
"Something like a sequential misalignment caused by an intradimensional incident."
"Oh, that," Sarah said with a grin.
She approached the console and laid a compassionate touch on the nearest panel. "Poor thing," but was instantly greeted with a mild electrical shock.
"Ow!"
The Doctor glared at her. "See? Temporal dysphagia." He gave the console another hard rap with his knuckles. "We need to find the source before it overloads the TARDIS circuit grid and disrupts the..." An alarm blipped on the console, stopping the Doctor in mid-thought. Lowering his eyes to the surface, he studied the blinking alarm. "Now that's curious."
"Curious?" she repeated.
"Curious indeed."
"Curious why?"
"Because it looks like the TARDIS found the source for us," replied the Doctor as he burst into action, flipping switches and adjusting dials as he moved along the perimeter of the control panels. Sarah moved out of his way.
"What about the cold?"
"What about it?" replied the Doctor in full multitask mode.
"It's cold.
Put on a jacket." Pouting, Sarah left the control room as the Doctor focused all his concentration on the developing catastrophe. Suddenly, the central column began to rise and fall, accompanied by the rhythmic squealing that signaled that the TARDIS was preparing to materialize. But where? No longer in control of his time machine, the Doctor stepped warily back from the console. He turned at a sudden movement to find Sarah standing behind him wearing a bulky fur coat.
"You look like you're off to hunt for a Yeti."
The time rotor came to a rest.
"We've landed, Sarah."
"Where?"
He shrugged. Sarah crossed to the console and activated the exterior monitor. It purred as it opened. Revealed on the screen was, to Sarah at least, a familiar sight.
"It's a jumble sale. We're on Earth," she said pleasantly.
The Doctor checked the panel.
"Looks to be your present time."
"I love a good jumble sale. My father used to take me to one at the South Croydon Church once a month. He never missed a good bargain."
He gave her a quick once-over.
"Why are you wearing that ridiculous jacket? It's near 35 degrees Celsius outside."
Sarah shook her head as she stripped off the heavy overcoat. The Doctor reached for the door lever and activated it. As he headed for the exit, Sarah tossed the jacket on the ground, unable to find a suitable place to hang it. The police box easily blended in with the menagerie of wares, trinkets, knick-knacks and collectibles that comprised the jumble sale. Held in a large church hall, the place was teeming with bargain hunters. The front door swung open as an eccentric man in a burgundy coat with dark brown patches and a long scarf exited. He stood before the labyrinth of tables congested by the sea of people. A moment later, he was joined by his companion.
"This looks fun," she beamed.
Fixed and focused, the Doctor moved into the crowd as Sarah tagged along as if in tow.
Behind them, a young couple approached the blue box and gave it their full attention. The young man turned to his girlfriend.
Far out. How cool would this be?
And where would you put it, Brian? She retorted.
Who cares? I must own this.
Brian flagged down the nearest proprietor.
How much for this?
The gruff-looking man shrugged.
It's not mine.
Brian turned around, but there was no other dealer nearby.
Then whose is it?
As they passed a table filled with ceramic cats, Sarah grabbed hold of the back of the doctor's sleeve and gave it a tug.
Hold up, doctor.
The doctor stopped and spun around.
Did you find it?
Sarah pointed to the table of the feline sculptures, and before she could open her mouth, the doctor extended a tubular metallic device with a red tip over the display. The device whirred a high-pitched tone. The owner of the trinkets watched him inquisitively.
The small ones are 10p and the larger are 25. I make them myself.
The doctor continued to scan the items, still not getting a reading. He turned to Sarah.
Which one?
Sarah reached over and scooped up one of the smaller sculptures, an orange calico.
I like this one.
Snatching it from her hand, the doctor ran the sonic screwdriver over the surface of the ceramic cat. Nothing. He studied his sonic screwdriver, curious why it didn't detect anything.
It must be suffering from interference.
Adjusting the device, he ran another diagnostic. Still nothing.
This is not the source, or if it is, then things are far worse off than I could have imagined.
I think it's really adorable.
10p of the smaller ones, said the woman.
The doctor handed Sarah back the statue and went about his business down the packed aisle. Reaching into her pocket, Sarah quickly handed the woman payment and took off after the doctor. Catching up to him, she matched his stride, noticing his scowl.
Are you sulking?
I never sulk.
Maybe I can find something to spruce up the TARDIS interior. You must be getting tired of the white walls.
The doctor stopped.
I happen to like the white walls.
Sarah gave her friend a knowing glance.
Nobody likes white walls.
The doctor ignored her.
Come on, doctor, let me go and have some fun, she implored.
The doctor just harumphed. Reaching into her pocket, Sarah removed a small handful of coins and held them out to the Time Lord.
Just in case you find something you like.
He pocketed the money and then went on his way, following occasional telltale blips of his sonic device. Sarah watched him disappear into the crowd. There was a look of disappointment on her face. But as she turned to find a table filled with trinkets from India, it transformed into a true smile. The sonic screwdriver took the doctor deeper into the mob. His head down, focused on the device, he narrowly avoided colliding with people with an almost sixth sense. He suddenly stopped. He smiled. He had found what he was looking for. Directly before him was a table covered with odd and peculiar items of all shapes and sizes. Some were mechanical in nature, others had a more organic feel. A large sign read, The Curio Imaginarium. Behind the table was a stocky man in his mid-40s, balding on top. The stallholder made up for the lack of hair on his head with a thick beard. Pocketing his sonic screwdriver, the doctor cautiously approached the table. Travis Lundquist noticed the tall bohemian man in the ridiculously long scarf and sized up his prey. All teeth and curls. What an easy mark.
Welcome to the Curio Imaginarium, he said, barely masking his contempt. We specialize in the unique, the bizarre, the otherworldly. What ear catches your fancy? I know you like what you see. I've seen that look before. It's the look of a man who wants the finer things in life. The look of a man who has seen the wonders, but has never held one in his hands. Well, sir, now you can. Not only can you reach out and touch it, you can own it.
I can?
The stranger marveled. His eyes settled on a crystalline sphere encrusted with jewel-like protrusions. It was perched on a small pedestal. Keeping his eyes on the bohemian, Travis continued with his hard sell tactics.
I was right. You are clearly a refined man with exquisite taste.
Picking up the sphere, Travis held it in his hand between them.
This is quite a rare item, my good sir. A jewel of the Orient. I discovered it during my last expedition in China. I had journeyed alone through the jungle for days, on a quest to find the most unique item in the world. And then one day, starved for food and drink, I stumbled upon an ancient temple hidden from the world. Not only was there a spring with the cleanest, clearest water you've ever tasted, but next to it was a single lychee tree, full of its fruit, ripe for the taking.
Travis gave a dramatic pause.
Laying at the foot of the lychee tree, cradled in its exposed root, like a baby held in its mother's arm, was the very sphere I now hold before you. A very rare item indeed.
The doctor listened to the man's fantastical tale.
How much would you pay for this one-of-a-kind item?
Asked the stallholder. The doctor reached into his pocket and pulled out one of the coins Sarah had given him.
Here's 50p.
Offended, the stallholder pulled the sphere closer to him and retreated back a step.
50 pence!
You asked me how much I'd pay. I'd pay 50p. So please take the money and I'll be on my way with the note.
No, you will not. And it's called the Jing Hong Sphere, not whatever you just called it.
The doctor looked at the coins in his pocket.
70p, then.
I greatly misjudged you when I called you refined.
80p.
The stallholder shook his head, cradling the sphere under his chin as if protecting it from the doctor's tactless offers.
£1 came next,
but these words were not spoken by the bohemian in the long scarf. The offer came from someone to the tall man's left.
I will give you £1.
Both men turned to the newcomer and studied him. He was lean and muscular and looked to be in his late 20s, but he spoke with the confidence and assurance of an older man.
Now that is a solid offer from an obviously solid young man,
beamed Travis. The doctor consulted the rest of his funds.
£1.20.
The new bidder countered before the doctor could finish.
£1.50.
£1.70. The man laughed, as did Travis.
£2.
Placing his coins on the table in front of Travis, the doctor began to empty his pockets, creating a sizable stack of unusual items, the top of the pile being a worn yo-yo.
Would this do?
Travis huffed.
Ideal in sterling only.
He gave a quick look to the man.
You have it, right?
The man nodded with assurance.
Sold for £2.
Spoke Travis definitively, while glaring at the doctor with spiteful satisfaction. Arms overloaded with a bundle of miscellaneous items, Sarah strolled down the crowded aisle, searching for more bargains. Barely able to see over her purchases, she came to an abrupt halt as she collided with a solid object directly in her path. "Excuse me," she apologized to the large shape.
"Why, did you sneeze?" replied the shape.
Pushing a bag away from her face, she saw the doctor smiling back at her.
"There you are," she said. "Buy anything interesting?"
"Almost," he informed her. "So now I need your help to steal it."
She glared at him.
"It's for a good cause," he promised her.
"And what cause is that?" she inquired.
"The lives of every man, woman and child at this jumble sale."
"Oh." Brock had got a great bargain on the Jing Hong sphere, and there's nothing he liked more than a good bargain. Except maybe the company of an attractive young lady. The woman making eyes at him from across the way was just his type. Dark hair, petite and compact, a real collector's item, as he liked to call them. About to head over to her, he was surprised to see that she made the first move. Placing his bags at his feet, he awaited first contact.
"Hello, my name's Sarah,"
she said with a smile. Delighted, replied Brock, dripping with smarminess. Having any luck? Inquired Sarah with an air of familiarity. Brock's brow scrunched. Do we know each other?
Not that I'm aware of, she answered nonchalantly.
Well, that's certainly something we need to rectify.
As Sarah forced a smile, her eyes dropped to the bags at Brock's feet. Crouched down behind them was the doctor. In one hand he held a small porcelain bowl. The other hand was occupied with retrieving the Jinghong sphere from the closest bag.
Why don't we get a tea? There's a trolley down the next aisle.
As the man spoke, he reached down to grab the handles of his bags. His hand was rapidly approaching the doctor's.
No!
Yelled Sarah. Her volume came as a surprise, causing him to freeze in place. He looked at her queerly.
I mean, no, we should get something a little more substantial, don't you think?
The words were ham-fisted, but sounded genuine enough.
I like how you think, he said coyly.
The minute he broke eye contact, Sarah threw a scowl at the doctor. Seeing that it was now or never, the doctor made the swap and rolled out of the way, cradling the crystalline sphere against his chest. A moment later, the man lifted up his bags. He seemed to frown at a slight discrepancy in the weight of the bags. But Sarah flashed a smile.
So, where shall we go? He recovered. My place?
On second thought, I think I've lost my appetite.
With that, Sarah spun around and made a beeline back into the crowd. The doctor and Sarah sat beside each other on the top section of a red double-decker bus. The crystalline sphere sat on the Time Lord's lap, wrapped in his scarf, along with a business card he'd taken from the closed Curio Imaginarium stall, giving Mr. Travis Lundquist's address.
Nice of that lovely couple to sell us back the TARDIS at only twice what they paid for it,
the doctor observed airily as the town passed by outside. Sarah scowled. She'd also had to pay for the bus fares.
I'm still not quite sure why we didn't just get in and go, she said. You have what you want. How is this Mr. Lundquist going to help?
I need to know where he got it.
Didn't he tell you that he got it in the jungles of Jinghong, China? Sarah reminded him.
He didn't get it from there, insisted the doctor.
How can you be so sure? Maybe that's where they make them. They have poor innocent children in sweatshops cranking them out.
Because this is one of a kind.
So was that porcelain bowl I bought that you swapped, she replied with a fresh spark of resentment.
Sensing her annoyance with him, the doctor turned to her.
At least your bowl was from this dimension.
The Curio Imaginarium was a small shop, sandwiched between a curry house and a not-so-trendy clothing store. The sign on the door read, Closed.
Shall we knock? Inquired Sarah.
But the doctor had other plans. His sonic screwdriver out, he had picked the lock in no time.
Or we can just let ourselves in, she continued.
Without further ado, the two of them barged in. The interior had a lofty ceiling that rose high enough to include an exposed second level, accessible by an iron spiral staircase. It was packed with odds and ends, knick-knacks, works of art, statues, and of course, curios of all shapes and sizes.
It's a lot bigger on the inside, bemused the Time Lord.
We're closed,
spat Travis from the back of the store, annoyed by the unexpected intrusion.
Well, that's unfortunate for you, then, replied the doctor.
Wait, it's you, said Travis from his stool.
The doctor looked quizzically at Sarah.
You know him?
Sarah rolled her eyes.
He's talking about you, doctor.
He is?
He said, considering the irony.
Well, of course he knows me. I was the one trying to buy the Xanth node from him.
The what?
Asked Travis.
The Xanth node,
answered the doctor as he revealed the crystalline sphere in his hand.
This.
I told you, sir, that is a Jinghong sphere from China, purchased from a reputable dealer,
he retorted. Then a curious look washed over his face.
And how did you come into possession of it, when I sold it to the other gentleman.
Sarah chimed in. How about we stay on topic?
You, sir, are a liar, barked the doctor.
Turning red, Travis stood up abruptly.
How dare you barge into my store and accuse me of such a thing? This is an outrage!
Instead of backing off, the doctor handed the sphere to Sarah and walked over to a nearby display counter. He picked up an odd item, holding it out to Travis.
Please put that down. It's a very rare lamp from Indonesia.
The doctor huffed.
This is a Ylorian spire. The only thing this would light up is your entire shop if you accidentally activated its self-destruct sequence.
Travis looked shocked as the doctor slammed the spire back down on the table and grabbed another one of the curios. Indignantly, Travis protested,
Now that is a precious 17th century goblet once owned by Carolus Rex, the child king of Sweden. I insist that you give it to me instantly.
I knew Carl XII personally, and he never owned a Zex hyperbike, and would therefore have no use for a new accelerator from one, informed the doctor casually, tossing the part onto the table with no regard for its value. Now I'm done playing games, the doctor crossed to Travis. Where did you get that Xanth node?
The basement of the store was remarkably less cluttered than the upstairs. All the boxes were pushed to the sides of the room, making a distinct path to a large painting hanging on the far wall. Travis motioned to the picture.
It's over there, he sounded defeated.
As they crossed toward it, Sarah studied the unremarkable picture, giving a grimace. I'm not an art historian or critic, but I can see why you'd want to hide this in the basement. The doctor turned to her.
It's not the painting, Sarah. It's what's behind it.
He looked to Travis.
Am I right?
Travis nodded, his face showing his annoyance. The doctor took hold of the sides of the frame and lifted the painting from a single hook, holding it in place. As he lowered the painting to the floor, revealed behind was an otherworldly object attached to the wall. Similar in a way to the painting that had concealed it, the object had a frame, or, more to the point, was a frame. But unlike the rectangular gold leaf wood of the painting's frame, it was octagonal in shape and made from something like white chrome. The frame-like object was held fast to the wall by red metal knuckles embedded into the stone. At each corner of the octagon were pen-like extensions that grew inward from the frame and terminated with silver tips pointed at the empty interior space it surrounded. Beyond it was just the wall.
What is it? Inquired Sarah.
The doctor regarded the object airily.
Oh, this? Just an interspace outer-dimensional portal banned by the Gallifrey High Council after the Tridex massacre on Vega Minor B over 1,000 years ago.
Oh, replied Sarah with tepid enthusiasm. She gestured to Travis. And where do you suppose he got it, then? She gave him a once-over. He looks somewhat human to me. A Zygon.
Somewhat human? I am human, he said, greatly offended.
That is the first truthful thing this man has said, offered the doctor. So, where did you get it, I wonder?
Who are you people?
Just answer the question, ordered the doctor.
Fine. If you must know, pouted Travis, an old lockup. The owner had died or disappeared or something, and I bought the contents sight unseen at an auction.
The doctor and Sarah looked at him blankly.
I'm telling you the truth, insisted Travis, and I'll prove it.
Travis crossed to a wooden file cabinet and pulled open the middle drawer. Rifling through the contents, he produced a yellow piece of paper. He crossed to the doctor and handed him the single page.
There! See?
The doctor gazed at the paper. It was a receipt for the purchase of a storage unit from a certain Lee and Dinnock Auction House Limited. The name of the storage locker's previous owner caught the doctor's eye.
I bought his stuff fair and square. You see the receipt yourself.
Travis pointed to the portal.
That thing was in the storage locker, so vis-a-vis, it is now legally my property, to do with and use as I see fit.
The doctor glared at Travis.
And let me guess, You figured out how to activate the portal. So whenever you needed a new curio to spice up business, you tucked away to another world or dimension to help yourself to whatever you could get your hands on.
Travis tore the receipt from the doctor's hand.
We are done here. I will ask you to kindly leave.
We are most certainly not done,
insisted the doctor as he crossed back to the portal, grabbing the Xanth note from Sarah's hands.
We still have this to contend with.
Finders keepers, said Travis.
What are you, a schoolboy? Scolded Sarah.
No, he's just a common thief, spat the doctor. And he's really done it this time.
What is so special about that sphere?
Raged Travis.
Other than it is the secretion from an adult female xanthine, and it sends a signal to attract a mate for procreation, not much, offered the doctor. But if you knew the xanthine, that alone would be quite enough.
Travis turned to Sarah for some semblance of sanity.
Clearly this man is joking. Xanthine? Who's ever heard of such nonsense?
The doctor doesn't make jokes, insisted Sarah. Hurt, the doctor defended himself.
Well, I have been known to elicit a few chuckles now and then, but generally speaking, I am quite serious. Or at least I used to be.
The Time Lord gestured to the sphere.
It's time that we return this before it's too late. Activate the portal, or I'll gladly do it for you.
Travis stood his ground momentarily, then stormed over to the portal with a huff.
If I must.
Standing to the side of the device, he reached over and opened a concealed panel on the frame. It revealed several buttons. Pulling out a small, tattered notebook from his pocket, he flipped to a page. He squinted to read his notes, reaching embarrassedly for a pair of reading glasses in another pocket. With his glasses now on, he consulted the particular code that coincided with the portal location where he had acquired the crystalline sphere. The portal hummed with life, as thin beams shot out from the extensions towards the interior of the frame. The wall behind the device was instantly obscured as a web-like pattern formed and solidified at the octagon's center. The dimensional portal opened. Travis turned to the doctor.
Now what?
But he didn't get to complete his thought, as the moment the dimensional rift stabilized, a male xanthine leapt through in search of a mate. The horned, bull-like creature crashed into the opposite basement wall, colliding with boxes full of curios. As it grunted, it expelled a green gas from organic pipes protruding from various areas on its neck, back, and all six appendages. It hurtled straight for the note, or, more specifically, the doctor, who was its unfortunate bearer of the moment. Without a moment to spare, the doctor lobbed the node to Travis.
Take it!
The charging xanthine snapped around, adjusting its course directly toward Travis, missing the doctor with one of its barbed horns by inches. Panicking, Travis threw the sphere towards Sarah, who instinctively caught it. The doctor yelled to her,
"Drop it and get away!"
As the xanthine galloped toward her, Sarah tripped backwards and fell into some boxes. The node slipped from her hands, traveling once again toward the doctor. The xanthine howled and resumed its attack on its original adversary. Acting quickly, the doctor neatly punted the sphere back toward Travis.
Back to you! I don't want it!
Cried Travis as the creature reversed its rampage. The doctor raced behind the charging creature to the bottom of the basement steps.
Over here!
Travis kicked the sphere to the doctor. The Time Lord scooped it up as the creature turned and raced toward him. He threw the sphere upstairs through the open basement door like a champion bowler. The xanthine barreled up the stairs after it, shoving the doctor against the wall as it passed by. The basement was suddenly filled with the sounds of chaos from upstairs as the creature collided with anything that got in its way on its quest to be joined with the node. Sarah helped the doctor to his feet.
Well, that solved that for the moment, she exclaimed, breathing heavily.
Travis didn't look as pleased.
What have you done?
He saved your life, that's what he's done, retorted Sarah, defending her companion.
That thing is destroying my shop!
Well, better it than you, reminded the doctor.
Make it stop,
Travis pleaded.
Oh, didn't I mention that once the male xanthine has the node, it needs to roll it back to the female in order to fulfill the mating ritual?
Asked the doctor,
And unless you want to bring the female here, something I strongly wouldn't advise, we need to work out how to get him back to his own dimension.
And how are we going to do that?
Asked Travis. We had better come up with something quickly, as I think I hear him coming back, warned the Doctor.
Do something!
Implored Travis. The Doctor noticed a familiar object laying in the mess. As the sound of the oncoming typhoon moved closer to the open basement door, he took his time walking over to the object and lifted it from the pile. This will do.
A cricket bat is no match for that thing, screamed Travis.
It isn't, asked the Doctor.
This is madness!
Then maybe you should step back a bit, requested the Time Lord. Are you too, Sarah? Both did as instructed. A moment later, the node came bouncing down the basement steps with the enormous monstrosity in tow. Standing his ground, the Doctor gave a few practice swings. The Xanth node hit the next to last step and bounced up perfectly as the Doctor swung. The bat struck the crystalline sphere, speeding it across the room. Oh, that's a definite six! The Doctor shouted as it hurtled directly through the middle of the still-activated portal. Obsessed with the node, the male Xanthine leapt through the air and followed it back through the gateway to its dimension. One of you may want to disable that portal before it decides to come back, said the Doctor nonchalantly, at Sarah and Travis's shocked expressions. Travis immediately sprinted to the octagon's panel and shut it down. As he caught his breath, the Doctor admired the cricket bat in his hand and turned to his companion. Remind me to thank Fiery Fred for the lessons, he said with a smile. The Curio Imaginarium was a disaster area. As the Doctor and Sarah made their way to the front of the shop with difficulty, Travis stood in utter astonishment of the chaos before him.
What have you done to my shop?
Asked Travis woefully. We didn't do a thing, informed Sarah, holding one end of the portal frame. Consider yourself lucky that we were here to help.
I don't feel so lucky.
Well, feel lucky that I'm taking this back to Gallifrey for safekeeping, offered the Doctor with little consolation. Travis surveyed the damage.
How am I going to pay for all of this?
The Doctor paused in the midst of the rubble. Handing the portal to Sarah, he rifled for something buried just below the surface. He pulled a rather nice-looking wooden coat rack free from the wreckage. A few nicks and abrasions to the finish, but structurally intact for the most part. Reaching into his pocket, he passed on all the coins Sarah had given him.
Here's a start.
Reluctantly, Travis took the money. The Doctor and Sarah continued their journey to the front through the mounds of junk. She held the portal while the Doctor clutched his new purchase.
Do you know, Sarah, this will be perfect for the TARDIS control room, he intoned with a wide smile.
Behind him, a shelf collapsed. They closed the door behind them.